This is episode number 395 with the incredible Maria Sharapova.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Welcome back to a special edition of the School of Greatness podcast. I am so pumped for our guest today in the interview. I've been wanting to have Maria Sharapova on for many, many months since we first met earlier this year, but didn't get a chance to have her on until now, and we talk about why in this interview. But for those who don't know who Maria Sharapova is, she is a professional tennis player, not just any pro, but one of the top in the world. She's an Olympic medalist and an entrepreneur, has many businesses. She became the number one woman tennis player in the world at only 18, and sadly, she had to overcome several severe shoulder injuries and setbacks, yet every time she clawed her way back, rebuilding her game and her strength. Now, off the court, Maria is an incredibly popular personal brand and has mass appeal that has led to major commercial endorsements with companies like Nike and Tiffany & Co. and many other top luxury brands. I've gotten to know her personally over the last year, and it's been so fun and inspiring to kind of get a behind-the-scenes look and hear about the stories that most people don't hear about. And I said, Maria, we gotta bring you on to let you share, because usually the interviews you do are only 5 to 10 minutes, and you're not able to share really the way you think, the way you prepare, the way you battle so hard on and off the court, and how you make it look so easy, and how you have it all. And some of the things we cover and talk about today are the biggest lessons she's learned in the past 8 months while being suspended from playing tennis. Also, the importance of continually growing, even when you're at the top, and even when you're not guaranteed a future. What Maria says is her superpower, the best way to choose how to spend your time and resources when you have so much going on, and also why Maria doesn't believe balance exists, and how to balance life without it. We also bring in a surprise guest during the middle of the interview. Spoiler alert, it's her coach. And I ask him a few questions about what makes Maria the best, what makes her so talented, and what makes her different than everyone else on and off the court. I think you're going to be really excited and interested to hear what he has to say from working with Maria so closely on a daily basis. This and so much more in this incredible interview. Make sure to share with your friends and watch the full video interview at lewishowes.com/395. Again, share it out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and tag at Maria Sharapova, at Lewis Howes, and let me know what you think. lewishowes.com/395. And without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only Maria Sharapova.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness podcast. Very excited about our guest. We have an incredibly talented individual, Maria Sharapova, in the house. Thank you so much for being here. High five it up.
Yes.
I'm super pumped. Super pumped. We got connected through your coach, Sven, who's in the house as well, like 8 or 9 months ago.
Yes.
Because he was listening to the podcast. Is that how it started? You were listening?
Yeah.
He was listening.
Sven was listening.
And he was like, you need to get into this greatness stuff.
No, I think I might want to take the credit for that.
Oh, really?
I think I somehow I heard about it through social media.
Oh, you heard about it first.
I think I heard about it through social media through some post of someone else.
I think you actually mentioned Simone.
Maybe.
You saw like her with a photo of a book or something.
Then I started listening to your podcast.
Before him.
I got Sven involved. Yes, I told him to listen. And he started, because he's been a huge Tony Robbins fan and listened to his podcast. And I had never listened to podcasts before. So you were kind of, and then since then, now I love listening to podcasts.
For some reason, I had the story mixed up. I thought he was the one who found it.
You see, we just started the interview. You already got something wrong.
We screwed up.
We got to start again.
Okay. But that's exciting to know. I'm glad that you discovered it and started listening.
Yes.
Appreciate it. And you've listened to a bunch of episodes, too.
I've listened to a lot. Yes.
Yeah, awesome.
I listened to one to Glennon's.
Glennon Doyle Mountain.
Yeah, yesterday. I just finished her book and thought I'd listen to the interview. Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. And then we met. You asked Van. You were like, hey, can you figure out a way to reach out to this guy, right?
No, I think it was interesting.
Your agent or...
I think that's how it went. The next thing I knew, I was like, "Yeah, we're gonna meet up with Lewis." I was like, "Oh, great!"
Cool.
I think I loved your perspective. I loved the way that you interviewed people. It was very casual. It wasn't, sometimes you hear interviews and there's some sort of mission behind that interview that's like too, I don't know, it's defensive. And I felt like your interviews were very open and challenged people, but it was a conversation. And I think that's when people really speak about how they feel and their emotions. And I think that's what people want to hear. I mean, people know a lot from externally through what, actors or musicians or people do through photos or videos. But when they have a one-on-one conversation, it's such a different feeling. So
have you ever done like an hour-long conversation like this on... Because TV is usually like 5 minutes, right?
That's right.
Like 5 minutes, maybe.
I actually think that Charlie Rose last week was one of my longer ones.
It was like 25, 30 minutes? Or...
It was 36, and they cut it to 34. So actually, that was...
Whoa, what did they cut? Let's get that.
I know. I'm just kidding. I thought they had everything, but they did... usually, they film for 45 minutes to an hour and then cut it to like 20.
The best stuff.
So,
That's cool.
That's good.
Well, I'm glad you came. I'm glad you guys made
it.
So thank you guys. And it's been fun to connect with you over the year. And
we've
had a lot of fun times.
We have.
I'm sure many more adventures to come. And you just played a match recently.
An exhibition.
Which is the first match in a while that you played.
Yeah, it was 7 months since I've played in front of a crowd. I got an invitation from Billie Jean and Elton John a few weeks ago to be part of an event that they've hosted for the last 24 years. Elton John has had a charity for AIDS for so many years. And obviously, usually I'm in Asia playing at this time of year.
So you've never done this event?
Never played that event. And it was in Vegas. Hadn't been in Vegas in a while. I was nervous. It was my first time coming back to just to a crowd environment and being around just a lot of people that I've inspired over the years that I've played alongside in ways, Andy Roddick, Marty Fish, people I've spoken to, Martina Navratilova, John McEnroe, obviously Billie Jean King, and I'd never met Elton John before. So
really?
First time. Yeah, it was the first
time.
So
were you nervous?
It's funny. I respect these people so much. I don't get intimidated by I don't want to use the word star power, but I just think everyone is human on so many levels, no matter what they've achieved in their life. And he's a hero, and to still be so active and to do the things that he's doing at his age and just be so young inside was really cool.
That's
and
cool.
Just to have a small conversation, just for him to even ask you a question, you're like, really?
You're interested in me?
You're actually asking me a question. So that was nice. And then playing that, having fun on court. You watched a little bit of it, right?
It
aired.
It was awesome.
It was fun. I had a good time,
you're
and I felt really, it's always, it's been a tough 7 months, and obviously coming back from that and just feeling like you get love and support and seeing fans and getting flowers after it and taking selfies, and it makes you feel welcome.
Social media, everyone's commenting about how you're back.
Yeah, it was really special. And then having like a really casual dinner afterward with all of them and just everyone goofing
around.
This
is actually probably the most relaxed I've seen you. Maybe because you kind of got like the match on the way, and now you're just like...
Well, it's interesting because last week when I was in New York, so I found out that my suspension had been shortened to 15 months. It's been like 9 days now. And when I found out, it was embargoed for a few days. So I wasn't allowed to speak about it, but just obviously through my close friends and family.
Felt relaxed.
And so that, just getting that decision that I was going to be able to play again next year. Just already looking forward to that so much, knowing how excited I was to share that news with my fans. I just almost couldn't keep it to myself.
Right.
And then I went to New York, and I knew that I'd do a little bit of press because I hadn't been able to speak about anything for the past 7 months. And
that's
I think
why
it
we
was...
couldn't do the podcast until now.
No. Well, one of the reasons I hadn't done anything, sort of media. So it was just nice to, it was really nice to just feel free and open to talk about a story that happened to me 7 months ago and get it out. And really, you know, I did, I think, 4 TV interviews. And but after I did the Charlie Rose's my first interview, and I specifically wanted to go on his show because I grew up watching him with my mother and go back home from a long trip, and she'd usually DVR his shows. And I loved his format, loved the questions that he asked people. He was inquisitive, but he was tough. Like, he asked tough questions, and I knew that I want tough questions. I want people to ask me the tough questions, so I answer them. I answer them today, I'll answer them tomorrow. And I knew that it was a good format for me. So that's what I wanted to start with. But after that interview, we came back. One of my good friends from London was there, and my coach Sven, and we were going to go to the Russian restaurant in New York. And I was like, we made a reservation, and I said, I just can't. I'm so mentally tired. I can't get myself out to go anywhere. So I just put on some sweats. We went down to the hotel, like lobby bar, and just ordered food. And Sven looks at me and he's like, I haven't seen you like that in so long. Actually, the last time I saw you, you let everything go and let all your emotion goes when you won your last Grand Slam at the French Open.
When was that?
And I think in 14, I believe.
Okay. Wow.
And I think it's because no matter if you're going through a tough or a really happy moment, you're giving so much of yourself without actually realizing it. Like, your mind and your body, you're just always on, always thinking. Your mind is always turned on. And when I think after I did that interview, and the news went out, I was just so relieved and so happy. And, you know, it's a long process.
Yeah.
And just like when you win a Grand Slam, not that I'm comparing the two at all, but when you win a Grand Slam, it's everyone's like, oh, well, let's go celebrate. No, we're going to go out and party. And the feeling that I have is just, I'm internally so happy, but I'm so drained.
Exhausted. The mental focus
just so
for weeks.
Because you just realize that it's done. There's no other match. And for me, it was that moment last week where it was like, there was not another email from my lawyer. There was not another this. There was not another conversation. I knew it was finished. And for me, it was almost like a celebration that I got through it in that light and how I came through it.
Right.
So.
Well, I met you in the beginning when it all happened.
Yeah.
And I've known you this entire time.
Yeah.
And it's been incredible to see your poise, your grace, your.
Thank you.
Your ability to not let it consume and control you. And to be able to have fun. And you've done so many other things over the last 8 months or whatever been with your businesses, with going back to schooling and getting mentorships and really applying yourself to grow.
Yes.
Trying different workout techniques, traveling, like having a life. Because since 14, you've been 14 when you went pro. Is that right?
I was something like that. Yeah.
Somewhere around. Yeah.
It's crazy. I started when I was 4 years old. Yeah. Professionally since 14 or 15. So,
Crazy.
Pretty much all my life.
So it's kind of like the first time you got to kind of do different things and be like
a normal. Yeah. The only other time that I can think of is when I had shoulder surgery. I was 21 and I was out for about 9 months or so.
But you weren't able to be active the way you have been.
No, because I was always in Arizona rehabbing.
Right.
But in a way, that time away from the court really helped me in this situation.
Yeah.
Because I think when you're 21 and when you go through a tough injury, you're questioning your future so much, especially you feel like I just won my third Grand Slam and I was sort of in the middle of everything. And I didn't know if I could ever play tennis again. And
that's scary.
It is scary. It's really scary, but it's interesting how you grow through while you don't know you're growing. You know, it was like 9 months. Sometimes you're doing all these things without, obviously life has no guarantees. Like there are only two guarantees in life, right? Do you know what those are?
Death and taxes.
That's right. High five. You're going to die one day and you're going to pay taxes.
Exactly.
And other than that, there are no. Well, I'm sure you still have to pay something. They get you anyway.
Exactly.
So during a time when you're faced difficulty, and whether for me it was an injury or whether for some people it's something else, you form some sort of strength inside of you without really knowing by doing something that will help you in the future. So I kept, you know, I was rehabbing a shoulder that I didn't know if it was ever going to come back to normal, I was trying to play left-handed all the time, not knowing if I'd ever play. So in my mind, like,
you're right-handed.
Why would I, I'm right-handed, right?
Gotcha.
So I would train lefty and do these exercises and think, and sometimes you come home and you're like, why am I doing this? Like, I have no guarantee that I'm ever going to be back on the court.
Right.
But then you get to a moment, you pass through that, you get back, like, I got back. And then you think back to that moment and you realize there's a reason why you did that. You build this strength inside of you to get through it.
And there's probably so many lessons you learn through the struggle and the challenges,
so much,
right?
So much.
What's the biggest lesson over the last 8 months?
Oh, my. So,
this is different than a rehab process.
It is.
You learn a lot about patience and
you do
working on other
skills. I don't even know where to start what I learned.
top two or three lessons in the last 8-9 months you learned.
Well, I learned...
Because this is probably the most adverse
Exactly. Especially for an athlete. It's one of those situations that's probably one of the toughest. I mean, injuries and something that I've experienced in the last 7 months is probably the toughest. So you can say I've been through everything. Well, one of the things is I learned... Like, sometimes you think it's something so major and that happens to you or is thrown at you. But I don't think we're ever given anything in life that we just cannot handle at all. That's just... It's not, we're always eventually end up handling it, whether we do it in a good way, whether we do it in a bad way, but we get through it.
Absolutely.
And that was hard too. So I'm always someone that looks towards the future. Like, I always try to think of the bigger picture when it comes to my life and my career.
Yeah.
I don't think short term, you know, I think of how will today impact tomorrow and impact the next month and the next year. And that was something that I could not think about, because I couldn't think about the future was scary.
You didn't know.
No, I didn't know. And I spend my whole life knowing.
Preparing for the next match, the next training.
The next tournament. I mean, my manager would have a schedule and everything's written down in a calendar and this and that. Yeah. Oh, the whole year and a half.
I know
what outfits I'm wearing in 2018. Then,
right,
I know what candy's coming out into that. It's just I always knew. So, but in many ways, in a time where I had almost zero certainty, I felt like I had a schedule. Like, I felt like I could plan things with friends. I felt like I could take a trip. I didn't have the pressure of a tournament coming up, so I didn't feel like I could go there with a friend because I'd have to sacrifice 2-3 days of training. That's been my life since I was 4 years old. So I learned, you get so consumed as an athlete. You get very consumed in schedule and your training and your life. And there's so many great things in life that you can do. But one of the best things I learned is that you actually have to take action and you have to do it. It's not going to come to you just by sitting in bed.
Yeah.
And so I think in that time, what I'm celebrating, many people have asked or said, especially in the press, why is she celebrating a 15-month ban? That's far from what I'm celebrating. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly not celebrating that I've been banned for 15 months. What I'm celebrating is that I've come through this time a better person than I was 7 months ago, a stronger person, a more aware person, a more educated person. I've been through this process and I feel that I could have taken an easy way out, which was just sit at home and hide from everything and just not be present. And I didn't. And from the first day on, that's a choice I made. I was going to go and do something about it. I was going to go and I was going to be honest to the world. I was going to go and I was going to take care of the things I wanted to take care of. I wanted to study. I wanted to meet people. I wanted to go on trips with my friends. So I took action and I'm celebrating the fact that I actually took it in my hands and made something out of that time and came through it in a good way.
Yeah.
Whereas it could have been very tough.
No, and I think you did it. And I always talked to you about how graceful you were and just the way, even just the posts you put out there was always like joyful experiences, things you're doing online. And people were like, why are you posting things where you're so happy?
right,
when you're going through this challenge. And
because I was, I really, it's funny that sometimes, because I do all of my social media, mm-hmm, and sometimes you get, when you post something right away, it's like, oh no, that's not her posting. There's no way. It's a right. fake. That's a fake smile. It's not. And I was like, no, actually, like, cause I think, as you know me, like, people know exactly how I'm feeling.
Right.
If I'm happy, you know I'm happy. If I'm, yeah. I mean, I wear my emotions on my face.
Yes,
you know
you
when I'm when I'm mad and when I'm angry,
absolutely,
you know it. And so I think that's quite, yeah, and that's yeah. that's how I share my feelings yeah. with my fans. And
right.
I think that's
normal. No, you did an amazing job. So congrats on everything
Thank
that's
you.
Happened and come back. And I'm excited. I'm going to be there for your first match already.
Thanks.
I got to plan it out. I got to make sure I get there for
okay,
the first
April.
Official match. April, I'm going to block off the month.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You talked about normalcy. Elton John talked about normalcy.
Yeah.
And how he was like a normal person asking
right.
questions.
Right.
And you're like, oh, interesting.
Right.
How are you a normal person? You know, you were a pro at 14. You
right.
I think you're the highest paid female athlete of all time. You've done like the biggest sponsorship deals. You've won every Grand Slam. You've, you know, been number one in the world.
Right.
What's normal about you?
I think what's normal is that I want to believe that I have my feet on the ground. And I think that's because of the way that I was raised and the two mm-hmm. people I had by my side, and that's my yeah. mom and dad.
Yeah.
And
who are amazing.
Who are very special and very different in their own ways, and have had very different, taught me very different things from a young age. And I was born in Russia, and I moved to America when I was 7 years old, and didn't see my mom for the first 2 years after moving to America because she couldn't get a visa. So we faced a lot of difficulties, a lot of adversity as a family, and we've all, and I don't have any siblings, so we're all very much together. Yeah, and especially during the tough times, I mean, they've been incredible. They've been
yeah.
so just there, and just their presence and their knowledge, and my mom is like a best friend to me.
Yeah.
But the way I think that I was guided towards that, I was always under their wings, especially under my mother's wings, in a very human and normal way. Like my dad, even though my dad was a coach for many years of my career, he was still, the things that he taught me on a tennis court were very much life lessons. And the things that my mom taught me off the court, she didn't know anything about tennis, were very much things that were life things as well. Very cultural, very, I wouldn't say optimistic, but realistic as well. Like my parents were realists. And I think that's so hard when you're in this world and in a celebrity world where you're invited to parties and you're invited, you know, to this and that.
You're invited
it's
on
so...
School Greatest Podcast. Big,
exactly.
Big stuff, you know.
You can, I know, that's
you're caught
right.
up in the head.
You do, absolutely. It's very easy to start saying yes to everything, to start believing in your head that you are greater,
yeah.
that you're greater than everyone else or everything else. And that's not true.
Right.
And so I think that just growing up under their wings has just helped me be human and real. And I face challenges. You ask me how I'm the same as everyone else. I face the same challenges that everyone else faces. I just face them in a different way, maybe more in the public eye than other people. But overall, I think everyone shares the same difficulties.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest internal difficulty you face?
Biggest internal difficulty. Oh, goodness. Wow. Stubbornness. I'm a very stubborn person, and sometimes I have to let go of that, and sometimes I have to let things play out. I know you're laughing at me, but
why do you think you're so stubborn? I'm curious.
You know, I think stubborn is good, and stubborn is good in many ways because you don't quit until you don't take no for answers. Mm-hmm. You don't, you know, rejection is not in the vocabulary. It's really not.
Sure.
But sometimes you need to just let things go, and you need to let things happen. And I fight that. I definitely have internal fights with stubbornness. I don't know. Mm. It's just the way, you know, sometimes when you want something, you're just stubborn. You're so stubborn, you just want it.
Who's more stubborn, your mom or your dad?
Oh, I beat them both.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think I got them through that. Mm. I'd probably say my mom is a little bit more chill. So maybe my dad.
Yeah. What was the biggest lesson each one of them taught you?
My mother had me when she was very young, and one of the things is she was a very protective parent, and like she didn't want me to go to preschool or kindergarten. Mm. She was 20 years old, and she was still in university at the time. So I spent my younger years, my childhood in libraries with her, and sometimes she would take me to lectures.
Wow.
And so I spent... Culturally, I think she taught me a lot. I mean, I listened to Pushkin and so many great Russian authors, you know, when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
She taught me that, you know, evenings I would be writing and repeating the written, cursive words and letters and making sure that they were perfect. And, never had a babysitter. So she was a very, you know, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents as well. It was a cocoon in a way. My father was very, very disciplined, and he was a smart guy. And during the early years of my career, everyone thought that he was crazy, and he's crazy in some ways because he's very tough. He's a tough guy. He has a tough look.
I like the guy.
He's
super nice, but
he's
like
a funny character.
He's
such a character, and he's so soft inside. Mm. but he's very he's a smart guy in a way that he didn't know tennis very well, and he learned from everyone else, and he took that knowledge and he brought it to me. Mm. And he knew that he wasn't the smartest guy. Like, he knew that he didn't know how to teach his daughter to be quicker or to hit a better forehand or to think better tactically. Like, he knew that he didn't know those things. So he went to the right people and searched the right people and brought them to me, and also took their knowledge and used it in the future. And, and I think as a father, that was very unselfish of him, because I think one of the mistakes that a parent can make is that they become a know-it-all and they kind of influence their opinion rather than their knowledge on
finding
you.
The best information.
Right.
What did he teach you mentally? If he didn't have all the best skills,
it's funny. It wasn't as if I ever, a lot of people ask me where, because one of my greatest strengths is that I come on the court and I feel that I have a mental edge against my opponents. And
you do.
I do. Yeah.
Why do you think that?
I just do.
What does the mental edge mean? That you're mentally tougher, smarter, more determined?
I don't want to use the word smarter. I think there are a lot of,
right.
In order to be a professional athlete and to be at the top of a game, I mean, you have to be pretty smart. You have to be talented. You have to be a hard worker. Everyone is.
Yeah.
Everyone is all those things. There's no one that doesn't work hard.
Of course. They want to be there. Yeah. What's the edge then?
I just really want it. I
want to win.
I want to win, and I hate to lose, and I don't like giving up.
But so do a lot of the top 10 people are probably all.
Well, I think there's, I'm not sure.
You just think you want it more.
I think there's a difference between showing up and playing, you know, because you have a lot of different tournaments. You have Grand Slams, which is obviously the biggest tournament. And then you have tournaments that are somewhere in Europe or in the middle of Asia that are smaller tournaments. But you can't just show up. You have to show up and compete. I don't believe, you know, a lot of people say that just by showing up, that's something. I'm not quite sure that mantra has never worked for me.
Right.
I'd rather not show up.
Right.
You know, it'd almost be a waste of time in many ways.
Absolutely.
Especially in my profession, just by showing up doesn't get me anything.
Right.
So how do I get there? It wasn't as if, you know, my father and my mom sat me down and said, you know, you have to work on your mental strength, right, or you have to be tougher on the court. I think it's just something, just by becoming someone in the public eye from a very young age, you gain these horse blinders. You know what horse blinders like that? Yeah.
I know all of these things you're asking me. Yes.
Okay. So, when I was about 16 or 17 years old, one of my coaches at the time, I was just starting to win a lot of matches. Mm-hmm. And I was at Wimbledon.
As a pro.
Yeah, pro already. And I was starting to get a lot of attention, a lot of media requests and interviews, and a lot of people just coming up to you and saying hello, which as 16 or 17 year old is a lot.
Yeah.
And I was getting further in the tournament. He says, "This is the time to put your horse blinders on." And I look
Who
at him,
said this?
A coach at the time, okay, that I had, okay, and I looked at him and I was like, I've had those on for a while.
Wow.
It's just, I think it's,
so you weren't able to, you weren't distracted.
No, I think it's a self, I created like a self protection for myself. Because that's how my parents always guided me through life. Mm-hmm. And that's how, because when you're out on the court, when you're at tournaments, it's just you. There's no one's protecting you out, yeah, there. You know, it's you on your own.
You
so
can't
I
be vulnerable the whole time.
No, I mean, you can be. I mean, there are many times where you feel vulnerable, but you have to get through it. Yeah. You have to get through it. So I think the profession itself taught me a lot about toughness.
Yeah, at an early age too.
And obviously adversity, and not, I didn't have all the things that maybe other young girls and boys grew up with having, or the luxuries of having.
Like a normal life?
Yeah, having a car, or, right, you know, right, having...
Were you in school then too, or no?
I was homeschooled, yeah.
The whole
so
time.
Through high school, I did it online.
Right.
So they would send me books. I had a tutor that I'd connect with on the phone or email.
Wow.
They would send me books, and my mom would break them up for me, and I'd take them in folders, and she'd cut them up in 6 pieces so I didn't have to travel with all the thick books.
Oh, I hate those books. I hate them.
You know, it's funny. When I received them, I was so happy.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's because I just grew up with the culture of learning. Mm. Like I love learning. I know, it was in the library, and there's something very, I loved it. I love that when you have an assignment and you have to get it done. I love that feeling. So when I received those books, it was like, I have this assignment, and I have schoolwork and homework, and I'm gonna get it done.
Wow. And yeah. And now you're studying more. You were
I was studying.
Off. You went to Harvard. Yeah. For like a 2 week.
Business. I did 2 different programs at Harvard Business School. They were Global Strategic Management and a leadership course.
How was that?
It was great. I spent first part of it on campus at Harvard, which was pretty surreal. I think for me, it was being surrounded. It was about 50 people in the first class.
You didn't go to college, right?
No, right. Didn't go to college. But I remember when I enrolled and I sent the application in and I got my confirmation on email.
For Harvard.
I printed it out and I just walked straight up to my mom because, that's something that she's so proud of. Like, of course, she's proud of what I've achieved on the court, right, and everything that I've been able to do in my life. But for her, education just so, it means so much. So she was so happy, and she sent it to my grandmother, and, you know, it just became this family conversation.
Sure.
But I think for me, the experience of being surrounded by, it was about 50 people in a classroom where I'm not the subject. Do you know what,
right,
I mean? That I'm not the one. Usually I'm at the front getting asked questions by media. And the Harvard Business School schoolroom, I mean, it's an auditorium. It's this beautiful, I mean, everything is top notch.
Yeah.
And it's a theater room. And where the professor is standing, as I'm sitting there, I was just thinking to myself, how nice is it just to be a participant and not to be, not even the pressure, but just to be someone that's getting information rather than just talking. Cause I mean, as a tennis player, we have to do a press conference after every single match,
right,
before every single tournament. I do interviews for sponsors. So there's always, you're
on
constantly
camera,
talking,
yeah,
about yourself and your life. And it's sometimes awful.
Yeah.
So it was just nice to not be, to have a conversation about business and about companies and doing case studies,
yeah,
with 50 people that are from different parts of the world, sharing each other's knowledge. And the biggest thing for me was to be okay with asking a question and not having an answer. because when you're in that environment, you want to act like you're a know-it-all. And I was the youngest one in the group. Right. I mean, you had CEOs of airlines there, and whereas I was, instead of actually contributing to a particular subject, I most of the time wanted to ask a question because I want to gain knowledge. Because when I was young, I was always very shy, and I don't know if I particularly enjoyed asking questions. I think
really?
I was very reserved and very quiet. And as I'm older, that's something that I've learned a lot, is you actually don't learn until you ask questions.
You're curious.
Yeah.
Why do you think I started this podcast?
Right.
So I can ask all the smartest people. You're a professor on the School of Greatness teaching. That's cool. So what's the big thing you learned then? Because didn't you do a case study with your candy?
So we were separated. So it was a 50 participants or so. And then in the evenings, they separated us into smaller groups. And they said at the end of the course, we want to, you within your group, you have to choose one of you. And one of you will have to present on your company. And based on what you've learned during these 10 days and how you're going to apply that, the challenges that you have as a company. So for some reason, as we're sitting there at 6 p.m. in Boston in a small room, they just pointed to me, everyone in that room, and said, we're going to do it on you because our companies are not so interesting. So they're like, we're going to do a case study on sugar boba. And we did it. And it was, I don't know, I felt like, besides obviously presenting to 50 people at the end of the 10 days,
I presented
kind of what
where
the plan, what we face, the challenges that we have, and how I will try to apply or attempt to apply what I learned in the past 10 days and what I've learned based on my business. But I was just, of course, I was nervous because there are Harvard professors next to me. There was also the 50 participants, but actually one of them was from China, and he, while I was presenting, he went on a Chinese version of eBay, and he looked at my product and he started reading the reviews, and he's like, so after I did the presentation, the participants could ask me questions or give feedback. Mm-hmm. And he's, as I'm doing the presentation, he's looking at the reviews and of the people. And then after I was done, he's like, so everyone that's bought your product has these great reviews. Why aren't you distributing more in China? So everyone just, it was amazing. And then everyone kind of had their two cents and asked me a question about distribution and so on. And it was just, it felt like this family that really cared about each other's issues and what they faced in their businesses. And that was just a different feeling from people that I've never met in my life. Cause I, you know me, I'm surrounded all the time by people I know.
Yes.
So just to come
same
out of
team, constantly.
Same team all the
same
time,
friends.
Probably 340 days a year.
Yeah.
So to be around and to interact with them, it was great. To
That's
come
cool.
out of my shell.
That's cool. Are you going to do more of this in the future? More classes when you
Well, now
time?
That I'm coming back, I hope that
no
I won't have time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back to my day job.
Exactly. No night classes online?
Oh,
no time. Yeah.
No time, which is a great thing.
Your spare time, though, you are working on different businesses. You have like, I don't know, how many different businesses do you have now?
So I have Sugar Pova, which is a lot and takes a lot up of our time. But also I invest
which is an
in
incredible
a sunscreen.
Candy chocolate company.
Candy chocolate.
Just so
we just launched
aware.
Chocolate a couple months ago.
It's unbelievable.
Yes. I know. Thanks for the product placement
you're
here.
Welcome.
So
yeah.
Nice of you.
Yes. You're welcome.
I also co-own a company called Supergoop, which is a sunscreen brand. Became an investor a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm just especially when I was injured and I had my shoulder surgery, I realized that even though tennis was part of my, might be part of my life for many years to come, but at one point it's going to end.
It's going to end. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? And I'm not good at sitting still. I'm not good at it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, even after the Vegas trip, I came home and my coach was like, you need to take a couple of days off because
like,
it's been a whirlwind. You were in New York and doing the press.
You're like,
and
I need spin cycle.
I do. I was like, I need to go do high yoga. And he made me cancel the class. I was so disappointed.
Oh, man.
So I always look for projects that one, I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
One that I feel have room for growth and potential for growth. Recently I invested in UFC fighting, which was a very different, very different because I'm not so involved in it. I wouldn't say I'm
passionate
or a huge fan of it, but I realize its potential, especially globally. I know how big it is over here. I followed it a little bit. I know all the names and so on, but I feel that has a lot of potential to grow.
Right. And IMG, so it's a good, right?
Yeah,
and you're IMG, part of
WME.
IMG.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I had the chance to invest. So I always look for things that when I'm done with tennis that I can really learn about and grow. But it's very helpful when you're passionate about it.
Yeah. How do you navigate? Because I'm sure so many people want so much from you all the time. I could assume. Maybe I'm wrong. But how do you navigate, at least from 16?
Like you.
Yeah, always.
Get on my podcast.
Always. But how do you navigate it, though, from just like – and maybe because you have a great team around you that you're kind of protected. But do you feel like people are always taking or wanting to grab things from you? And is that why you're so stubborn, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I do. I think a lot of it comes with having a good team, and a lot of people know my interests. But to be honest, I love doing different things, and I love to be a part of things. And sometimes you do have to slow me down because I put too much on my plate. I was building a house for 3 years, then I got to decorate it. And, you know, I practice and then I'm at an antique shop 30 minutes later looking for furniture. And then, you know, I don't like those legs. We got to customize the legs. I got to change the material. And then I have a Nike design meeting. And because I wear a collection on court, and then some girls that play on the tour wear some of my pieces as well. So not only thinking about what I'm wearing, I'm thinking about what the team girls are wearing as well. So, and I'm thinking a year and a half in advance. So I go from practice to working at my home to a design meeting
to
thinking of
tasty chocolate, to a photo shoot. Yeah.
So there is a lot, but I really love it.
Yeah.
I mean, boredom is sometimes good. Like even in the last couple of days where I just had
nothing.
I finally finished the book. I watched a few shows.
Oh, that you're reading.
Yeah, that I was reading that.
Because you're writing a book too, right?
I'm writing a book as well.
Or should we not say that?
No, that's fine. No, everyone knows.
Okay.
I'm writing a book. I haven't been able to write in the previous months. I think I almost didn't want that memory on paper.
It's going to be there though.
It will needs absolutely to be there. Be there. Yes.
People want to read about
it. Yes, I'm going to be working on it next week in New York.
That's cool.
But yeah, I love the things that I'm a part of, and I think that's why one of the reasons I've been able to be successful, and it takes my mind off the physical grind of my real job.
Yeah. Exactly.
It is so physical and so mental that it's nice to go into different areas. It helps you grow, and there's also so much you can do after I leave that court.
I don't know if I got the answer yet, but I'm curious, why do you want to win so bad? Why do you want it so bad?
Mm.
Like, you've won so many things. You've been number one. You've done every Grand Slam you've won, right?
Right.
What's that called when you win every Grand Slam?
I don't even know.
No. You've won everything,
Grand Slam,
right? You've won every match that you could win, right? Every tournament you've won pretty much.
Somewhere like there. Yes. Yeah. I've won all the Grand Slams.
How are you so driven, and why? To win and strive to be the best still? Like, why?
Because I love the sport. I love the sport. I love the feeling. I think also selfishly as a woman, it's a really good feeling to feel good at what you do.
Yeah.
To feel strong and powerful and just good at it. And know that there's, by working on it, that you can be better. That's just... there's nothing else that where I feel that.
Yeah.
You know, cool. I'd love doing other things, but when I'm on the court and I, even when I'm rusty or even when I don't get to a ball, which is a lot of times, it's like, oh, that chocolate I ate last night.
Dang, sugar boba.
Exactly. You know, I eat a lot. So,
so do I.
I eat a lot. So, yeah, I love the feeling of getting better. I love that challenge. And there's nothing winning. Winning in tennis is a spur of the moment. It's like that final point and that emotion that you don't get with anything else. It's not like
I get it.
You're not, you're, I guess your success is in your own hands. Mm-hmm. It's not in the hands of anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a team that you build and that helps you get you to walk to center court, and then you walk out there, but then it's you. So, and if you lose, you know, or you win,
it's on you.
Yeah. Mm. And I love that pressure.
Mm. So you can't get it anywhere else.
No, not, I haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
So
I hear you. Do you have any regrets for your career of like starting too soon or not going to school or relationships or anything like that? Is there any regrets along the way?
I don't want to use the word regrets. It's a pretty strong word. Mm. The one thing I do regret is not learning more languages when I was young.
How many do you know now?
Two, Russian and English. But I wish that I would have learned more languages. You pick them up so well when you're young. And I think it, especially in today's growing society and world, it would be really great to know more languages.
Yeah.
That's one thing. As far as other things in my career, I don't know, or relationships. I think when you talk about career and relationships and regret, I think, you know, people, you talk about balance a lot, like that kind of strive for balance.
Yeah. How do you do that? Because you
I don't, because I don't, there's no balance.
Right.
I don't.
It's full on for your.
Well, I don't think I don't think balance exists. Mm. I don't think there's ever 50-50.
Right.
I think if you're 50-50, then you're just 50% at one thing and 50% at another thing. And is that good enough? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not in my opinion.
Right.
So how do you manage? It can be good enough,
right?
Which is, I know a lot of people that do it, and that's their good enough. That's their great.
That's it's what they want.
It's what they want, and exactly. And it just has never worked for me. I don't feel fulfilled. I don't feel that I'm getting the most out of myself when I'm just 50-50.
How many days are you on the road on a normal year when you're healthy and
a lot, like 250 maybe
250 on the road.
Probably.
So how do you have how have you had a relationship when you're competing and so focused on being the best at one thing?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to kind of, you know, you're sacrificing your career when you're trying to make a relationship and you're trying to make a life for yourself off the court, which obviously I would love very much because I'm almost 30 years old and I do see myself being married one day and having children, obviously being so close to my parents. But how did I've managed it somehow. not well enough, obviously.
Sure. What do you think it's going to take from you to be able to have it all in the future?
I don't know. I don't know if I always want it all. Mm. I don't know if I all is, that's pretty strong. All is very strong.
Okay. Just take it one year at a time.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. It's not something that I sit here and say, "Oh, I'm gonna have it all. I'm gonna, have a healthy and strong relationship while winning Grand Slams." And yeah, that's my goal. I'd love to have that. That's obviously what everyone would love to have in any career that they have.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious about what you think about when you said, you know, you're with the team until you walk on the court and they escort you on the court. So what does you think about either in the locker room beforehand? You guys have locker rooms, right?
We do have locker rooms.
In the locker room beforehand.
What kind of question
is that? In the locker room beforehand or when you're walking on court, do you have a mental practice or a visualization technique or something you do? Or do you just go out there and perform?
Pretty much.
You just turn it on.
That's one of the big differences that I see. And I've lived in the United States since I was 7 years old. Mm. But I think that's one of the biggest differences that I see culturally.
Yeah.
Is like before a match, it's not that I have a ritual or I'm reading an inspirational book on how to become a better person or a better fighter or a better athlete. It was funny when I came to the United States, that was the biggest surprise was that you see so many, books about like chicken soup for the soul.
Yeah.
Or chicken soup for, or it was about, or, you know, from a woman's perspective, like take care of your body. And I'd never like, that
they don't
was
have
not
the positive messages in Russia.
Well, I'm not sure. I just wasn't really exposed to it. So it's always a lot of things that you read. For me, culturally, it was like poetry and reading like very, you know, deep literature that would just kind of inspire your mind.
Right.
Whereas in the United States, a lot of books that are written are, you know, to motivate yourself and are more like a self-help book, which in certain times is very helpful. And I've read many of them and have been inspired by many of them. And I've read yours, as well.
Thank you.
So that practice for me of, okay, I need to meditate for, mm-hmm. you know, 10 minutes before a match, because that's how that's, no, it's just like, I have a routine of, you know, I know when I like to warm up.
Put your shoes on at a certain time and you're like,
no, like
dressed.
I put my left shoe on before my right. I've done that since I was young. Like
sure,
that's just almost like a routine to me, you know?
right. But you know, when you like to warm up, you have a
Yeah,
time
I know when I like to warm up. Mm-hmm. I know when I like to eat. I know what I eat.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. And that's it. That's all
that's
I need. I usually have a book with me that I read, and that doesn't really matter what it is.
To kind of just chill your mind out, or to kind of...
Just because I don't want to be doing it. Like, I don't want to... I usually don't watch any TV or... Because in tennis, you're usually following another match. So you're always waiting around and looking at the score. So instead of that, I just want to be more in a different mindset of reading a book or...
And you can get more focused when you're not thinking about the match beforehand by kind of being in a different world by reading and then just turn it on.
I think that's the best. That's the goal.
For
the
you,
goal is to think, for me, personally, the goal is to think of the match or to think of the situation when you have to, and not when I'm in the locker room eating my chicken with no sauce and cold rice and carrots and broccoli.
Sure.
Like you want to be, you're just focused on the food. And then when the time comes that, you know, 20, 30 minutes before the match where you finally huddle with your team and talk about the match, absolutely. You think about strategy, but everything before, it just becomes too much.
Yeah. I want to do something I've never done.
Oh,
I'm
going to
have, I'm going to turn the camera towards Sven. So you want to turn it towards Sven. I'm going to give you the headset for a moment.
He was my driver today.
So Sven is Maria's coach. And how long has he been your coach?
3 years.
3 years.
Yes.
You can turn it to him. I'm going to give it to him in a second. Yeah. 3 years. So I want to ask you the question of why did you choose to work with Maria exclusively one-on-one for the last 3 years? And what's the thing that's impressed you the most about her over every other athlete you've worked with? And what does she do better than everyone else? This is Sven.
He was wearing a t-shirt the other day that said, "I don't do interviews," which was pretty, it was pretty funny. Oh, now he's in the spotlight. he's not going to lunch afterward.
Because I normally don't speak.
Okay. No.
I only speak to her.
Well, yeah, that's right.
So these are three. If she gives me the green light.
Of course. he's
so
his own boss.
Why did I choose
working with Maria? It actually was a very easy choice to do so. I came out of a... I worked 15 years with players one-on-one, many different players, men and women. And then I worked 8 years as a consultant for a brand, which I'm not going to name at the moment, but which involved scouting, development, interim coaching. A lot of variety. And there came a moment where I knew that she would become available, and I had a good relationship with her. Somebody else was coaching her, but I also knew she was going through a tough time, being in the tennis industry and being so, you know, immersed in this for the last 25 years. I also know her coming on the scene, and I've always been very impressed by her demeanor. And I wanted to work with her because I knew I was going to learn things that I hadn't learned before. I think very selfishly, actually, not only that I can add value to her, but she has to add, a player has to add value to me. In order for me to give my best, she has to give her best. And I knew that going into that, she would open new doors. It would give me definitely new experiences. The last experience I didn't anticipate.
So, just say it lightly.
So I was definitely not ready for that. And so, but I knew that I would get inspired. And in order for you to travel the world, about 40 weeks out of the year that I do, and actually turn out that the first year was like 46 weeks we were together, you better be around people that inspire you. Because if they don't, then you really don't last. So, you know, now 3 years on, I can't wait to get back on the court. I still, every day, it's like a first day. And to have that and to get that that inspiration and the feeling of we've not reached a ceiling. So that was the reason, actually. It just gave me a lot of perspective and a very bright horizon. So that inspired me.
What's the biggest thing you learned?
The biggest thing I learned is her ability to adapt, her ability to shift from being on the court and then going absolutely, you know, at one stage also having some losses, and to be able to walk into a press room and able to answer questions so articulate and so without any hesitation of words. I think her ability to shift is phenomenal in competition, but also on court, from sponsor to the media. That I've learned from her, that is phenomenal. Well, I think you touched that very, you know, and she said she's very stubborn. And well, it's a gift. It is a gift. We had a laugh about it the other day. Actually, also her father said something that was quite interesting. And it was about consistency makes great champions. She's consistently stubborn. And that drives me, because I have to be constantly, if I say something to her, I better be damn sure about something, because if not, I have no chance against her. Because
do your fact checks first.
If her mind is set on A and I'm coming with B,
no chance.
There is absolutely no chance. I mean, that's the thing. So there's stubbornness, but and in my experience of working with professional tennis players, individual sport, the greatest that I've worked with is Maria, being the greatest stubborn player, individual, and doesn't matter if it's a woman or a man, or her ability, that sets her apart. I am most proud of her, how she, and that's just because I'm with her for those 3 years, only 3 years, but the past 7 months, how she stayed in the moment, worked on herself, how she absorbed and was like a sponge to grow. It's inspired me. It got the team through it, because of her strength, that allowed us to also give more support. And I'm very proud of that. That's a big step for me to experience.
Thank you. Very nice. That was like an exclusive with Sven Grunefeld.
Exclusive with the legendary coach. I like it. We'll have to do more.
We had a good practice. You missed our practice this morning.
I'm not invited.
You're all.
Am I always invited?
How many times have we invited you to practice?
I'm always gone or something. Yeah. I'm going to show up one of these days. I'm going to text Sven and just show up.
Yeah, you should.
And surprise you.
You should.
With my racket and my 10 times of experience.
Well, when we played
on
beach
court,
tennis, I remember, I think you won.
I was not bad.
You weren't bad. I mean, you know, there's room for growth.
Lots of room. I played tennis maybe like 10 times in college, and I could never figure out how to serve.
But so I did beat you in bowling.
One game. Another game, though.
You did win the other game.
So we had a rubber match.
No, that's fine. But I do want to say that I
will acknowledge
beat you
that
in bowling.
You beat me. I let you win. It's okay.
I never won in bowling in my life before.
No, you're amazing.
That was
You were great.
That was special.
You were great.
Just wanted to make sure that all the
everyone knows.
Know.
Yes. Well, yep. I don't know. One of the greatest female athletes of all time can beat me once barely by bowling. It's all good.
That is because I'm terrible at everything else that I do in sports.
Except for tennis?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you good at ping pong?
No.
I am really good at ping pong. Well, I'm going to say it.
Yeah, I'm not even playing you in that.
We will play. Are you good, Sven? Tennis? Or table tennis? We should play.
Table tennis.
You don't have a table, do you?
No.
You got to get one.
I just have a bowling alley.
I know. You're insane. okay. I want to ask a few more questions before we go get some sugarfish. What's the thing you're most proud of that maybe most people don't know about you or that's not in the public eye?
I'm most proud of the consistency with the people that I have around me. I've had same faces and same minds and with me through so many years.
Yeah.
And it's special because I see so many people come and go out of people's lives.
Yeah.
And just proud of having that support and that team that really that you grow with together.
Right.
You know, you grow and you learn, and sometimes you don't even need to say things about it, but just getting through situations gets you. I mean, I'm certainly proud of, I only have a handful of friends, but I've known them for
close
so
friends.
Long. Very close
you
friends.
You got a ton of acquaintances, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have a lot of acquaintances, but I have a really strong group of friends that are so just amazing.
Yeah.
And I've
good people, solid.
Good people.
I've met a lot of them. They're
yeah,
great.
Yeah, you have. And they're very different and come from very different businesses and, have different jobs, live in different parts of the world, but are very special people.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that. What is it about, athletes after they retire? There's some who are successful in the next thing and there are others who, just live in the past and they're not able to break through mentally. They don't have the same mental toughness. What do you think that is about athletes? Have you seen some of your friends retire from tennis and kind of not do as well? And have you seen others do extremely well, whether in business or something else? And what do you think that is?
I think everyone has a choice. Mm. Everyone has a choice and it's up to them. It's up to them to do something with their life. And some people choose, being an athlete, it takes a lot out of you. It takes, it's very easy to burn out and it's very easy to get tired.
Right.
It's from simply traveling. And, just when I was in Vegas a couple of days ago and I wake up and I've been home for a while, but also traveling on like trips that, I'm usually in a hotel where I want to stay, but I was in a hotel room and, spend like 16 hours in the room and just, I was a little sick, but I was like reading and then I ordered room service and it gets lonely.
Yeah.
It's very lonely. And years of that and the same place year after year, you know exactly which tournaments you go to. But I was saying to my team after the match, I said, this morning I kind of felt really crappy because I was like, I'm coming back, but this feeling that I had in the hotel room in the morning, it was awful, Because I've loved waking up to this beautiful view every morning.
Exactly.
Then I was just, I don't know, I was in the middle of buildings and I ordered this coffee that was just awful.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought to myself, and then I went 6 hours later, I was on the court and I came back from that and I said, this is exactly why I'm doing
it.
This is what makes it, this is what's, this is why.
Of course.
But the point is that you go through those moments and some people just, that's enough. And it's totally understandable.
Yeah.
I just personally, I love challenging myself to different things and I love traveling.
Yeah.
So that's never been a problem for me. I love the fact that you can get on a plane and be anywhere in the world. I know when I'm on a long trip and I'm walking in the airport and I see all these destinations, I'm so happy because I know that I can be in a matter of what, like 10 hours on the other side of the world with anyone that I want to be with.
Mm.
So that always gives me a sense of almost perspective that, I know I'm far. I know that I'm, all my friends have a wedding that they're going to or a birthday party or a holiday that I'm missing, but I know that I can be there with them. Maybe not in this moment, but when I finish the tournament, I know I'm just a flight away. And that hasn't changed for me. But work-wise, I think people just, you choose what you want to do. And yeah. I think you have to like in the past 7 months, like I could have chosen not to do anything. And I could have just,
and there are other athletes who have
rented a barn in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know.
There are other athletes and, who have, I'm thinking of a woman in the UFC who kind of go off the grid when something bad happens and they don't post anything on social media for months. They don't do any press. They're like depressed when some adversity they face. And you chose to be the opposite. So I think it's true. You have a choice on how you respond to every situation and every transition in your life.
I think, of course, everyone has a choice, but everyone is affected by something in a different way. Yeah, and I think the way that I took things in my own hands, it made me, I don't know, it just, from the first day, I felt really good about the way that I handled the situation. I was proud of it. And I think that helped me build towards, you know, training. I've been training differently, but challenging myself in different ways. You know, making sure that my mind, as I said, it was very painful to look long term. So I really put a lot of effort into my body and just trying to work on staying fit, which is when you're a professional athlete and you don't have your profession. It's very difficult because I love to eat and I love a lot of sweets and I love being social. I have a candy company and I love going out with my friends and having Moroccan tea with biscuits you know, it adds up. I love having sangria.
I hear you.
You know?
I hear you.
It's not great when you don't have a profession.
I hear you.
So I really had to put my mind and my body and train. And so, and I chose that. People can guide you, but you have to do it.
Your discipline.
You have to. And maybe there will be times in my life when I don't.
Yeah.
But in the situation I did, and I'm really glad I did.
Yeah. Well, I think you've got a powerful vision for how you want to be, the things you want to create, the things you want to achieve in your profession. So
yeah, I do. I think vision is really important.
Yeah. And
I think vision is a strong word.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you like vision then?
I do.
It's not like the other two.
No.
Words you
like. No.
Vision is a strong word in a good
vision
way.
Vision is, yeah.
What would you say your vision is?
My vision is to keep getting better, to keep improving, to, as an athlete, as a person, as a daughter, as a anyone.
Yeah.
I think it's just to keep getting better.
And do you have any fears?
I don't think so. I've had, you know, I've gone through a lot of adversity in life and I think if there were things to fear, it would probably be then.
But not before then.
Well, it would have been like, I'm talking about even when I moved to the United States. I mean, we didn't have a lot of money as a family. And I think my father came with $700, savings from grandparents.
Yeah.
I was 7 years old the only thing we came with was a tennis dream, which is.
I mean, as a seven-year-old,
it's a pretty optimistic. So there's a lot of things that could have happened that obviously wouldn't led me. I realize that I'm amazingly fortunate to be where I am today, and that people that will take the same route will maybe not end up in the same position. And I know that, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any question that you wish people would ask you?
I don't think about it. Because people ask a lot of questions. So once they're done asking, I'm just thankful that there are no more questions.
Okay. Well, we'll get to the last couple then.
No, that wasn't a message or anything. It was just
teasing. What are you most grateful for then in your life recently?
Health. Health. I'm so thankful for being healthy and having a healthy family around me. My dad struggled with the health of his mom in the last year, and that was really difficult to go through as a family, and she's doing much better. Just health. You realize when something hits like that in life that it's health is just key to the way that you feel, to energy, right? Like even when I'm a little sick, I get so down because I'm just, it's not me. I don't feel like my normal crazy self.
Sure. Stubborn self.
Sure. I'm usually quite energetic and I'm passionate. And, and so when something is limiting me or I know I'm injured and I can't go train, it's really hard.
Right.
So health is very grateful for that.
All right. Well, I think you know what this last couple questions
yeah,
are.
I don't know them by heart, but I listen to
You've
them.
You've heard them, so
and
subconsciously.
Trust me, I don't know what my answers will be. So.
Okay. We'll give you a moment to swing and think about it. So this is called the Three Truths question. And if it's the last day for you many years from now, what would you say if there was no record of anything you've ever created is gone? No books, no videos of you playing, no interviews. So there's no messages of you.
All right.
And you have to write down three things, three lessons, truths that you would pass on to your friends, your family, and the world. What would those be?
Messages to them, but not about me.
Three truths that you would pass
on from all
the lessons you've learned in your life. Yeah, three truths about how you what you would give to people to live by.
Right. I think be real. Realness and reality is something I feel like I've always had to come back to in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. No matter what you're going through, just be real to who you are, be real to what you give. Don't do something or don't accept something that's not you.
Right.
Honesty. I think honesty is huge. It's a huge part of life and it kind of goes with being real.
Yeah.
Being first honest to yourself.
Yes.
Which is the most important thing because you can guide yourself in so many wrong directions when you're not honest. And honest to the world and to people that are obviously very close to you.
Yeah.
Cause that's how friendships and relationships really build and become strong. And the third, I don't know. oh goodness.
Be real, be honest.
Well, learn. Don't be afraid to learn and grow.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people are almost a little afraid of that, right? Mm. Like it's almost too powerful in many ways. Like
yeah.
when I was in the classroom and I, like the first day I was so, like there was a conversation which I didn't understand. It was a topic about finance and it was just numbers and, I just couldn't. And finally, after like 4 hours, I finally raised my hand and I asked a question. And I felt like I actually felt like I contributed because it started this whole other conversation. And I realized that other people around me weren't quite aware of what we were talking about.
Sure, sure.
So I think that's that. Yeah. Mm. Learn by asking questions.
I like it.
Yeah.
Those are great. Good answers. What how can we support you? You got Maria Sharapova.
Oh, you're always supporting me.
Well, how can we as a community support you? Where do you like to hang out online the most? I know you're on Instagram a lot.
I know. Yeah, I mean, I have a Facebook, I have a Twitter. They're all different. Instagram's more my creative platform,
yeah.
I would say.
You're great on Instagram, yeah.
Thanks.
So we follow you everywhere.
Twitter is more like informative, news related. Facebook I'd say is a little bit more corporate.
Instagram's you behind the scenes, personal.
I think so. Yeah, I love
training.
Nothing like putting
traveling.
30 different filters on a picture.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
that take
yeah.
20 minutes of your day. Make your life look so much better.
Exactly.
Than it is.
Absolutely. so we'll have everyone follow you on social media.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Can we get?
I can't
some
wait
product?
For my fans to listen to all your other podcasts.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited for them too as well. I'm excited for them to hear this one.
Yeah, no,
this is the most important one. Maria, come on.
I don't know.
How
about
can
that.
We? How can we get some of the candy and the chocolate? Can
Sugar
you get
Pova,
it online?
Yeah, Sugarpova is on sugarpova.com.
Sugarpova.
Right there. Yes.
The chocolate bars are amazing. The candy is amazing.
Thank you.
Grab some
Gummies.
Of this. Check
some
it out.
In time for Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, you got some Halloween stuff
we
too?
We do. We have some spooky sours, which are little
Ooh,
spiders.
I saw the photo shoot with that. Yeah,
yeah.
I saw you post that. That's cool. All right. Yeah. Anything else we can...
No.
It's all on MariaSharapova.com. All this stuff.
All of this is on
MariaSharapova.com. Okay, awesome.
Yes.
We'll go there and connect there.
Yes, thank
when
you.
When you get your book coming out, we are going to push it extremely hard. And
thanks.
Everyone will buy it, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know when it's coming out yet, but.
Yeah,
in
like 5 years. Yeah. It's okay.
Well, with my pace and all the life events that happen to me, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know. I need a second book.
Yes, I hear you. Well, before I ask the final question, Maria,
yes.
I want to acknowledge you for a moment.
Thank you.
For your incredible friendship.
Thanks.
I'm really proud to be your friend and to know you because
Thank
of,
you.
I don't think many people I've met are able to go through life so gracefully with the adversity you have, with the platform you have, with the attention you're getting, with the press, the pressure that could potentially be built upon you it's been so beautiful to see how graceful you are.
Thank you.
And how strong and amazing and inspiring you've been through the adversity. This is the only time I've known you.
Yeah.
Is when adversity struck.
Yeah, you actually wrote me a birthday card.
Yes.
You wrote me a really nice birthday card. You said, I've pretty much only known you through this time.
That's it.
And I can only imagine what you are like when.
That's it.
When so, you're going to win
I,
and.
Exactly. So I acknowledge
in
you
in your
for,
happy days.
Exactly. You've been amazing in the worst of times.
Thank you.
And I acknowledge you for who you are in the
Thanks.
World, for the way you inspire so many people. Whenever, you know, I post a photo with you guys, when I'm with you guys, and people are like so inspired.
Thank you.
Like, Maria is like my favorite tennis player. She inspires me so much.
It's funny. I don't think I ever realized that until I've gone through this last 7 months.
So many people supported you.
Yeah. I not that I took it for granted, but I'd never like believed how impactful, the things that I've done in my career, how they've impacted people.
Yeah.
You just, I don't know. I don't think I ever wanted to feel that way or have that responsibility and, you know, almost the pressure of, wow, I am actually inspiring so many people. But just the messages that I've received over the past, months has been made me realize how many amazing fans I have.
Well, you deserve it.
Thank you.
You're a great symbol of inspiration. So
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Wait, is there another question?
Yes. The final question is, what's your definition?
That's right. I should probably know this after listening to your podcast.
Come on.
Oh, my definition of greatness. Well, I think definition of greatness is, I don't know, it's who you are inside, and it's something internal. I don't think it's something words ever, I think it's a feeling, right? Mm-hmm. I think everyone has, in a different moment in their life, always different feelings. And I think greatness is how, you know, it's almost what you do with those feelings and what you turn them to be. I just think it's a very personal feeling, right? Yeah. That it's in your mind and in your body, and it's not something that's around you or, it's a little bit more personal.
Okay.
Did that answer any?
Perfect for me. It's your answer. It's your answer.
It is my answer.
So it's perfect. Maria, thank you so much
for
being here. I'm so glad we made it happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Can't wait for everyone to hear it.
It's going to be great. And thank you, Sven. Come on up.
I know.
Cameo.
I think that was his first,
you're the man.
First questions answered in about 3 years.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This is great. There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I enjoyed connecting with Maria and sharing all of her insights and wisdom with you. It's been an interview I've been wanting to do for a long time now, so I'm super pumped we're able to make it happen. And it's so exciting for me to see all the things that Maria is creating, how she's overcome adversity, and what she continues to do on a daily basis to grow personally. Again, if you enjoyed this interview, make sure to share it with your friends, lewishouse.com/395. Post it on Twitter, post it on Facebook, Instagram, tag at Maria Sharapova, and let her know what you liked about this the most. Let me know as well at Lewis Howes. And if this is your first time here, make sure to subscribe to the podcast over on iTunes. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, as it's our goal to bring you the most inspiring human beings on the planet to show you how to unlock your own inner greatness. So again, if it's your first time here, subscribe and let me know what you think over on social media. I appreciate you guys so very much. You're the reason why I continue to do this every single day, to seek out the information, the wisdom, the humans who can teach us all how to become better. So thank you guys for spreading the message, for listening daily, and for using the information in your own life to achieve your dreams. I thrive off of hearing your results, so keep it up, keep pushing. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.